Last time I asked you to count who would be at your door in 2 hours on a regular weeknight if something happened. No warning, no prep, just who comes. And I asked you to sit with that number without running from it. Some of you came up with a solid handful. Some came up with 2 or 3. Some of you came up with a number that surprised you in the wrong direction, and that surprise stayed with you. Here's what I want to talk about today. Because if you did that exercise honestly, and especially if the number was smaller than you hoped, I'd be willing to bet that a second thing showed up right behind it. Not the number, a voice, a quiet one. And it probably said something like this, "Sure, maybe that matters, but my number is what it is. I'm too set in my ways. People my age don't make new real friends. I've been too busy for too long. I've moved too many times. I'm not naturally outgoing. My life just isn't built for that kind of closeness anymore." That voice, I want you to hear me say this clearly, is not a small voice. It's not neurotic or dramatic. It's actually a reasonable voice, making a reasonable argument, and a lot of the time it sounds exactly like wisdom. Like you finally stopped being naive and grown up about what life is. I take that voice completely seriously. And this whole episode is about taking it apart, piece by piece, to find out whether it's actually true. I want to introduce you to someone because I think she'll be familiar. Her name is Karen. She's 48. By any public measure, she is a success. She runs a team of 20 people at work and runs them well. She's the person her siblings call when there's a family problem that needs solving. She is capable and organized and, genuinely, a good person. She took the 2-hour test about 6 months before I first heard her story. And her number was 3, maybe. One of them was her husband, and she wasn't even sure he'd answer the phone at 2 in the morning on a work night. She had hundreds of connections, LinkedIn, contacts, people who knew her name. She had almost no one who'd come. And here's what Karen thought when she saw that number. She thought, "This is just what happens when you get older and you get serious about your career and your family takes up all the space. This is what grown-up life looks like. My number is what it is because of the choices I made. That's an honest reading. There's nothing self-pitying about it." Karen is actually right that those choices shaped things. But she stopped one step too early. She named the input busy, career, family, and called the result a fact of nature, the way your height is a fact of nature. And that's the step I want to walk back with her. Because her number wasn't a fact of nature. It was the output of a long set of habits, and those are completely different things. So what was the habit? This is the part Karen hadn't seen. And it's the part the doubt voice hides from you, because the habit looked exactly like a virtue. Karen was the capable one. She was good at solving problems, and she'd built a life around being good at it. At work, she handled things. In the family, she handled things. With friends, the handful she had, she was the one who showed up when something went wrong. She listened, she fixed, she carried. And without meaning to, without choosing it on purpose, she'd been teaching everyone around her one lesson for about 25 years. I don't need you to show up for me. I've got this. Every time she waved off help, "Oh, I'm fine, don't worry about it," she was closing a door a little further. Every time she handled something herself that she could have asked for help with, she made the people around her a little less sure they were needed. Not because she was cold, because she was strong. And here's the thing about strength. When it becomes a habit of never needing, after a while, the people around you stop offering. Not because they don't care. Because they've learned you'll handle it. You've trained them, kindly and over time, to treat you like a wall and not a door. That is a habit. Not a character flaw. Not a consequence of age or distance or career choice. a habit, and a habit gives way. Now I want to pause here for a moment because I want to tell you something the books spend real time on, and it comes from the science side of things, from how researchers think about our health and how long we live well. There is a solid and growing body of research, built up over many decades by scientists who study human connection, that says something most of us have never been told plainly. Being cut off from other people is one of the more serious risks to your physical health there is. Not just your happiness, your actual body. The risk that researchers keep finding, in study after study, is in the same neighborhood as some of the things we work very hard to avoid, the same category as not moving enough or smoking. That's not a small thing. That is a big thing. VERify. And the reason I'm telling you this here, in the episode about doubt, is that the doubt voice, the voice that says my number is just what it is now, I've made my peace with it. That voice is not just a little sad. It is describing a real risk that we have the option to do something about. The books don't throw this at you to frighten you. They bring it in because the news is actually good. If this is about risk, and risk is driven by habit, and habits give way, then the path out is not a miracle. It is a door you already know how to open. You've just stopped opening it. That changes tonight. So here's the moment this whole episode has been walking toward. You now know that the number is a habit, not a fact. You know the habit has real weight to it, real consequences worth caring about. The next question is obvious. Okay, so how do I actually grow it? And the answer is the one that Karen found, and it is the one that surprises everyone who hears it, because it is completely backwards from what you'd expect. The fastest way Karen grew her number was not by doing more for people. It was by letting one person do one real thing for her. Think about what that means. Every relationship you have is shaped by what the people in it know about each other. And the one thing the people in Karen's life did not know, had never been shown, because she never showed them, was that she could be helped. That she had hard things. That there were places where she didn't have it handled. The moment she let one person in, and it was small, nothing dramatic, just asking a colleague to look over something she was stuck on and actually sitting with the help instead of brushing it off. That one moment told that colleague something Karen had never said out loud in 25 years, "You matter to me." What you think matters. I need you. That is how the flow moves, not by doing more outward, by opening the door inward. The jar doesn't fill from one direction. It fills because the way back in is open. I want to stay with you for a minute before we get to your one thing for the week. Because I know that some of what I just said is going to bump up against something real for some of you. The voice that says too late for me is not one voice, it's several, and some of them have more weight than others. Some of you are in places where the geography is actually thin. You moved, your people scattered, the fabric just got cut in ways that time and proximity haven't repaired. Some of you are coming out of a long stretch of loss, a death, a divorce, a friendship that broke, and the number didn't drift down slowly from neglect. It went down hard, fast, in a way that left a mark. Some of you have health or work or family demands that leave almost no room. I am not standing here telling you those things aren't real. They are real. What I am saying is that none of those things make the door permanently shut. They make it heavier. They make the first step harder. They make the ask feel like more is on the line, but the door still opens. And this matters. The research the books draw on does not find that you need a crowd. It finds that what changes things is having even a few real ones, people who know you, who you know, who'd come. The number doesn't have to double by spring. It needs to go from where it is to one more. That is always available to you. One more. Your one thing this week. And I want to say something about what this is before I name it, because this one is going to feel backwards, and I want you to stay with it. This is not a test. It is not a self-grade. It is not a homework assignment where you're grading your own social life. It is a gift, something you give to one specific person. Here's what you do. Think of one person you'd like. Closer. Could be someone you've known a long time but drifted from. Could be someone newer who you keep meaning to go deeper with. Could be someone who's been offering to help you with something and you've been waving them off. Pick that person. And this week, let them do something real for you. Not a favor you engineer so they feel needed. An actual thing you actually need help with. Ask them to look at something you've been wrestling with. Ask them to come with you to something you'd rather not go to alone. Ask them to tell you what they think about a decision you've been sitting on. Let them show up for you, and actually let them, not just go through the motions of asking and then dismiss the answer. Here is the thing I want you to hold while you do it. Letting someone help you is its own kind of giving. You are handing them the gift of mattering to you, of being needed by you. That is not nothing. For the capable people who've been waving help off, it might be the most meaningful thing you give this year. One ask. One real person. One opening of the door. That's the gift you give this week. Here's where we land. The doubt voice. Too late. Too set. My number is just my number. Sounds like wisdom. It sounds like you've grown past wishful thinking and made your peace with something real. But we looked at it closely tonight and found that what it was actually describing was a habit. A long, quiet, kindly meant habit of needing no one. And that habit wore the costume of a personality trait, even a virtue, until you looked at the shape of it. You looked, and now you know. The number was never frozen. It was untended. And untended is different from finished, because untended means you can tend it. You can open the door. One ask. One real need, shared with one person who'd be glad to be asked. That's where the flow begins. Not from the outside in, but from the door swinging open. Now. If the number can grow, and it can, the next question is what a real relationship actually runs on day to day. What keeps it warm? What lets it get through a hard season without snapping? That's the country we're moving into next. Watched over, as always, by Daisy. Until next time.